Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how the events that they depict will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant, and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number, toll-free, to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program is 877-300-7645. In fact, speaking of that, we had a caller in the second half of our program yesterday that brought up a topic that was completely unrelated to what we were talking about, but the question that he posed is an interesting one. He presented it in a thoughtful manner by citing from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And while I do not concur with his conclusions, we are going to spend the second half of today's program discussing the particular psalm that he quoted, because the insights that we can glean from it are extraordinary. It is a marvelous psalm. And by the way, had the caller presented evidence that contradicted a position that I have presented and held, I would have actually been happier. There is a huge advantage of being shown to be wrong, because if someone can show that you're wrong, then you have the opportunity to correct your mistake. You have the opportunity to embrace the truth. You learn something that is useful going forward. You know, you're no longer going to make that same mistake if someone shows that you're wrong and you're willing to embrace it. And by embracing the truth, you display the attitude that I think God would like us to have, which is, you know, we goof all the time. And when we goof, so long as our attitude is and our minds are open to the truth, then we're in a position where we can continue to learn and where our relationship with Him can grow. So that's where we're going to spend the second half of the program. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. It is an extraordinary message that was contained in that psalm, so I'm particularly pleased that it was presented. Yesterday, we spent the first 15 minutes of the program talking about the Israeli political condition. And I'm going to return to that with an article that I thought was extraordinarily thoughtful this morning. And the reason for that is that Israel is the canary in the mine shaft. Israel is the barometer of the weather that is to come, the storms that are to come. By examining what is taking place in Israel, we have the opportunity to better understand how Yah's prophecies will be manifest, how the timeline will play out, how the various parties will be positioned. Because one of the things that we know is that while Yisrael will not be destroyed, God has made it very clear that once He calls His people back to His promised land, once He does that, they're not going to be expelled. Now, they're going to be harassed. They're going to be terrorized, He said. They're going to have Muslims invade the land and be poised to destroy all of it, including Jerusalem. And they're going to be poised to do that not once, but twice. But God's made it very clear that they are not going to be able to defend themselves, but they're not going to be totally destroyed either, which means that both times He is personally going to intervene. Now, that's very different from what we've seen in the past, because Israel in the past has defended itself through its own actions. I mean, David yesterday made a statement that caused my skin to crawl when he was talking about how the Jews had prevailed both in the Six-Day War and then in the Yom Kippur War. By the way, Scripture presents Kippurim, which is the plural of Kippur, Kippur is reconciliation. Kippurim would be reconciliations. Yet rabbinical Jews use the term Yom Kippur, reconciliation. And what's interesting here is the attitude that is displayed by that. You see, rabbinical Jews think that the Torah was just given to them, and yet they disregard it and twist it and change it and corrupt it with their Talmud. And yet what God says is that there's one Torah for everyone, Goy and Yehudim alike. And God speaks of his path as being the lone path for everyone, which means there's going to be more than one group of people that are reconciled. And so it's the day of reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, not Yom Kippur. That's at least according to Yahweh. Now, he made the comment that we really are special people. And in describing their ability to prevail over the Islamic attacks. Now, recognize that Islam dumbs people down and enrages them to the point that they're extraordinarily ineffective. So, they do have the world's dumbest enemy. But this attitude of we prevail because we're really a special people, that's grotesquely inappropriate. It's why God, one of the reasons why God just says, you know, in the book of Hosea and in the psalm that we're going to consider today, it says, you know, your attitude stinks. I just can't deal with you anymore. I want to give you a long time out. And they're in the midst of that long time out. But it is germane still to understand how Yisrael goes from being able to militarily prevail against Team Islam to the point where Scripture says there's going to be two assaults from Team Islam, the Dar es, the Islamic phrase, that Jews are unable to rebuff. The first is in the Magog War, where they mass inside of Israel and are poised to take Jerusalem, and then God himself intervenes. And then the last is the is Armageddon, the great rendezvous, and in that case, while I don't think it's Muslims anymore, I think at this point the Muslims have been essentially wiped out by God. In this particular case, I think it is socialist secular humanists, mostly from Asia. And God will turn them to goo when he returns. And so we need to understand how Israel goes from being able to defend itself to not being able to defend itself and becomes totally reliant upon Yahweh. And it is that reliance on Yahweh that ultimately causes the people to recognize, wait a minute, we have acted badly, and it causes them to recognize Yahweh for who he is and embrace him. So let's share this article this morning, talk about it a bit. It begins. Israelis went to the polls on January 22, 2013, to elect their prime minister and representatives. To no one's surprise, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should once again be at the helm of the country, although the party lost many more slots than was expected. For ourselves, we were delighted to see some of the new names in the ranks, such as Moshe Fleglin. He's a real conservative. He's one of those. Fleglin is a name that, if you haven't heard, I would encourage you to pay attention to Moshe Fleglin. He is a guy who understands that you can't trade land for peace and engage in negotiations with Muslims. Another was Oret Stuk of HaBayet, Ha Yerudi, the home of Jews would be the translation of that. They are joining the ranks of many wonderful members of the Knesset who are friends of this particular news source, is AFSI. And they list some people who are no longer going to be in the Knesset because of the voting system. This particular article was written by Arlene Kushner. I do not know Arlene, but her article is absolutely interesting. It's it reads B.B. Blewett. Now, I do want to lead into this by saying that, reminding our listeners, that I am anti-political. God is anti-political. I see Bibi Netanyahu as being better than the average politician. I think he has a bit of a backbone. He is willing to use evidence and reason. But I am certainly no fan of him. I am no devotee of Likud. I am anti-political. And I think the politics in Israel are extraordinarily screwed up. So with that background, let's consider this story. Now, that said, I do have to tell you that those who are who recognize that there is no chance whatsoever that peace will be advanced or served by giving the mythical people known as the Palestinians their own state, from which they can launch more effective terrorist raids against Israel, that those people who are in that camp, I am wholeheartedly opposed. And those who would say that recognize the Torah's covenant promises to Yehudim and to Yisrael and the connection between the covenant and Yisrael and would claim this land based upon the promises that God made regarding it and would recognize that Muslims cannot be trusted and will never be trustworthy because of the very nature of their religion, where the Quran expressly tells them to deceive and expressly orders them to hate and to kill Jews, that anyone who tries to tolerate them, tries to compromise with them, is a fool. And I oppose them. So this is the story. Oh, Prime Minister Netanyahu's joint Likud Bentenu list secured by far the most votes in yesterday's election, and it is expected that he will form the next coalition and continue his role as head of the government. But the election results could and should have been so much better. The counting is not quite over. The soldiers' votes are yet to be counted. And so there may be a shift of a mandate seat or two. But right now, here is the lineup. Likud, 31 seats. Yish Atid, which is Yair Lapid. That's the man who was who became popular. He just started his political party. He is a television spokesperson. He garnered 19 seats. Labor, 15 seats. Habiyat Harude, which is the Beyeth, the home of Yaudim, garnered 11 seats. Some say as many as 12. We'll return to this. Returning to the results of the Israeli election, the Likud party, 31 seats, and the 120 seat Knesset, 19 for the newscaster. Labor, which is essentially a socialist party, won 15 seats. Their increase from their previous totals were born simply out of the economic issues underlying Israel right now, a very, very high cost of living in Israel. The Beit Harudi, which is the Jewish Homeland Party, which is way conservative in terms of I have no interest of ever negotiating with the mythical people known as the Palestinians, won 11 seats. The Shas, which would be my least favorite party in Israel, far less honorable and deserving than Labor, won 11 seats. Now, the Shas, which are the Haredi, their whole mindset is that they will join whichever coalition is willing to pay them the most money. They don't work. They spend all day being repulsive. They dress in their little black hats and little black outfits. They have their little curly Q hairs. And they spend the day bobbing up and down at the Wailing Wall. They are completely useless human beings. I mean, when God said that he sees the faces of those who are Torahless, who are religious, as if they were covered with dung, this was the portrait. And they're unwilling to serve in the IDF. They're unwilling to protect Israel. They don't want to pay any taxes, and they want the government to provide a welfare system so they can spend all day being religious. And so they will join whatever coalition is willing to provide them with those benefits. One of the reasons I hate the parliamentary system as well. United Torah Judaism won 7 seats, so that's 18 seats for the religious parties. There's the Levini Party, which won 6 seats, Meretz 6, Kandima 2, and the combined, it says Arab parties, but the Islamic parties, 12. So that's the breakdown. Likud at 31. Was the clear winner, but only in a plurality, not in a in any sense of a majority, not by any standard. I mean, they won, 25% of the vote. And if you put them with the Beit Haruti, the Jewish Homeland Party, it's 42, and that's only about a third of the vote. Now, this puts the right wing religious, so the most conservative and the religious parties, in a dead heat with the centrist and left wing, or so says the media. But since the Arab parties are never part of the coalition, the right religious wing has greater numbers, and Likud Bitano remains at the top of the list by far. Now, it's interesting that the Arab parties would side with labor, and they would side with any liberal group that was willing to capitulate land for peace. But they are the enemies of Israel. They want Israel destroyed. And so when you have your avowed enemy, the very people who are engaged in terrorizing you and are calling for your destruction, wanting to join your side of the coalition, you're probably not on the high moral ground. Now, the big shockers are that Likud got only 31 and not the 42 seats that had been predicted when Likud and Yisrael Beitenu merged their lists some time ago, or even the more recent predictions of 35. So they performed poorly. Similarly, Habiyat, which is the habitat, but it's the Bayeth is, ha is the Hebrew word for the definite article, the, and Bayeth is actually Bayeth, which means house, home, and family, and ha is again the, and then they have Yehudi, rabbinic corruptions change the pronunciation of the hey in Hebrew so that it would be an eh to change the pronunciation of any word that contains Yahweh's name. It is Yahudi, and Yahudim would be Jews. Yahudi would be Jew, and that's what they're saying here. This is the home of the Jews. That party had been predicted to have won 14 or more mandates, and at 11 they underperformed a bit as well. Now, we're going to return to these the results of this election, because I want to point out something that I think is very concerning, which is compromise in politics. Shattering this. I'm reading a headline right now that is going to have me interrupt our our presentation of what is happening in Israel in terms of their politics. It reads, Britons are urged to leave the Libyan city of Benghazi immediately. Now, if Britain, France, Italy, the United States, Qatar, Saudi Arabia were responsible and vetted the opposition groups that we supplied heavy arms to, machine guns, anti-tank rounds, surface-to-air missiles, rocket-propelled grenades, the very kind of weapons that were used to kill our ambassador. If we did our homework and we vetted the protesters that were rebels and opposing the existing government, then when they prevailed, there shouldn't be a threat. After all, these were freedom fighters and seeking democracy. We shared values with them, right? So why would the source of weapons to them, their supporters, be in danger if they were as they were presented to be? Freedom fighters with shared values. Why doesn't the world ever stop and say, wait a minute, if this is the case, we really screwed up. And if we goofed here, if we were so ignorant that we supplied weapons to those who want to kill us with those weapons, who are threatening to kill us with those weapons, then we should hold somebody accountable, like our government leaders, and make that decision and boot them out of office. And in addition to that, we ought to figure out why we made this mistake so we don't make it again. But who in this apathetic, ignorant, and irrational world is doing that? Excuse the rant, but let me return now to the situation that exists in Israel following this election. On the other hand, the gains of three seats for HaYehudi is a positive sign. It functioned as the new national religious party previously, but now Bennett, its leader, is emphasizing unity and a home for all, and he has broadened his base so that the party has become a player of consequence. And the left-wing parties aren't happy. Their numbers are particularly low. I mean, there once was a time when Labor trumped Likud. So who's happy? Well, Yair Lapid, whose party has garnered far more seats than anyone thought possible. Yair Lapid today is something of a kingmaker. Credit Yesh Atid. Now, who is Yesh Atid? He's a newscaster. He's a newsreader. Handsome guy. Articulate. Good in front of a camera. Now, this woman who wrote this article says, when I said that Bibi blew it in terms that, let me explain that in terms of the factors that I have in mind, she says. First was his decision to merge Likud's list with the Avigdor Lieberman's Yisrael Betanu, which would mean the home of Yisrael. It seems in the end that there were Likud voters disgruntled with Lieberman and Yisrael Betanu voters disgruntled with Netanyahu, and the net result was a loss of voters to both parties. And in the last election, these two parties running independently garnered a total of 42 mandates, and this time only 31. So the merger, the compromise of between the parties was counterproductive. Then there is the abysmal campaign that Likud ran, and she just goes into talking about how they paid no attention to the grassroots in this particular campaign, and she said it was a result of misplaced complacency. Then she spoke of campaign errors. One of the campaign errors is that Netanyahu attacked Bennett personally. And that Likud also attacked the HaYehudi, and that's a party that they have to have in the coalition. You know, how are you after you've said, hey, you're this homeland for the Jews party is wrong, and that it should not be considered, it should not garner your vote. How do you then wrap your arms around and say, oh, I was just kidding, they're just fine, I want them to be part of my coalition? What that says is, and it puts a big sign on your head, I can't be trusted. I will do and say whatever I need to do and say that is expedient for my own political purposes, and I have no conviction. You can't trust me. I will say one thing one day when it serves my interest and something else the next day when it serves my interest. That's the very concept that Paul used and he admitted to in the book of Acts where he says, you know, in front of Jews, I act like I'm a Jew. And in front of Gentiles, I act like I'm a Gentile. And for those who are Torah observant, I pretend to be Torah observant, though I'm really not. And for those who, you know, discount the Torah, then, you know, I discount the Torah. I'm, you know, whatever I need to be. Such people can never be trusted. She then writes that the Beit Yehudi party has a theory. It says that young voters tired of the old politics and the reruns of the political mandates. We're looking for a new face, new personalities. And Bennett and Lapid became those personalities, and they voted for the personality, for the dashing man who spoke eloquently. That was sufficient. It was very much like the American elections 4 years ago. And to this fact that Netanyahu did not change campaign, did not campaign on the issues, instead just said, let's stay the course. That was not effective either. Now, as typical, she writes, of Benjamin Netanyahu, he did a fair amount of vacillation, providing potential voters with a mixed message and left them confused. On one day, he took an admirable stand with regards to the intention to build in East Jerusalem. And he certainly saw to it that the illegal tents that the Arabs had constructed there were removed promptly. He declared that there would be no mass movement of Jews out of Judea or out of Samaria during his next term as well. All sound and clear messages. But then he said that he would be governing on the basis of his Bar Ilan speech, which called for a demilitarized Palestinian state. Methinks that sometimes an effort to please everyone pleases no one, she concludes in this portion of her article. And that, my friends, is the problem of politics. Politics is based upon trying to please everyone. Politics is based on compromise. And those things are alien to conviction. They are alien to Yah's perspective, his foundation, which is the Torah. God's not in to being tolerant. He's not into compromise. He is opposed to those things. He isn't trying to please everyone. He only wants to please his children. And there's only one method, one path to him. And if you try to negotiate with him and say, hey, what about this over here? Would you be willing to accept that? No. I've told you the way to me. You can accept that or you can reject it. It's up to you. You want to be in my home? These are the house rules. This is how you get there. This is where the doorway is. This is where the path is. This is where the house is. You either come to me along the route that I have provided, or don't come at all. And that's the problem with politics. They want to please everyone. And in so doing, you end up pleasing no one. Why? Because you're not reliable. You're not dependable. If you will say different things to different people, to please different constituencies, then you are proving that you are not trustworthy. That's why God doesn't have two covenants. In the Old Testament and the New Testament. To be trustworthy, you have to be dependable, which means you don't change. In learning of the election results, the Prime Minister seemed pleased and declared himself grateful to be given the opportunity to lead the country for another 4 years. Of course, he would say this, but I think that at a very basic level, it is his party that is hurting more than he. Netanyahu said, and I consider this admirable, that he would be focused on Iran in his next term. There are those who suggest that he didn't discuss this enough during his campaign because he sensed that the people don't want to hear it. Thus was the focus. As such, there was no focus on matters such as less expensive housing. That's a big thing in Israel now, is it's very expensive to live there. He also said that he would be forming a broad coalition. This would be his style. He has no interest that I can discern in forming a right-wing religious coalition. The guessing now is that he will include the Ha-Bayet, Ha-Herudi, the Shahs, the UTJ, the United Torah Judaism, and Yesh Atid, which is the journalist party. And it seems likely that he will bring in Livni, for a host of reasons, but we should never say never, I suppose. Livni is angling for inclusion. He said that he would not block a Likud coalition. He would not block Netanyahu. But think of this. The Livni from Yesh Atid is... His primary theme in his campaign is that it's grotesquely inappropriate to exclude the Shahs from military service and to provide them with welfare for doing nothing. That was his main theme that resonated with voters who are paying too high taxes to support the religious malcontents. And yet, we're going to create a coalition that's going to include the religious malcontents and the party that won a surprising number of seats opposing them. Now, if they can become bedfellows, then what it shows is that neither have any conviction, that neither are principled, that neither can be trusted with what they said. And then where are you? You're exactly where Yah wants you to be, not trusting politicians, not trusting religious leaders, relying on Him instead. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Mess. I'm your host, Yada. One of the things we've been talking about is this tendency in... parliamentary systems to compromise and end up with a muddled mess that serves no one. This particular article, and we'll conclude it with these thoughts, suggests that while leader of this, the journalist spokesperson that did so well in this particular election, Lapid, is a novice at politics, and that his only qualifications are he has been a well-known TV personality, is that there seems to be some sense of responsibility there. He has gone out and said clearly that the problems in terms of the so-called Palestinians and the Israelis are not caused by Israel, but instead by the Palestinians, and that he is convinced that most of them are not in the least bit interested in working out a solution or to make peace with us. And he actually began his campaign in Judea and Samaria. And he said, I would never pull back to the 1967 lines and give the so-called Palestinians a state based upon that. So at least we have that as a bit of comfort here in terms of what is going to transpire. We have Jack. He's calling in from Cape Cod, a beautiful part of the country. He has a question or a statement that he wants to make on what he calls pseudo-Jews and a DNA study. Hello, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hello. I was wondering about these opportunistic Jews, or pseudo-Jews, they call them. There have been a report that they do not have the DNA of any of the 12 tribes. I wonder if you're familiar with any of the Khazars, converted Jews.
Yeah, you're talking about Russians every time I've read anything about that, it just reeks with ill-founded conspiracy theories and anti-Semitism. I don't. I don't give it any credibility at all. Every time that has come up in any article, and I have read them in the past, I have found that they were written by conspiracy theorists who are anti-Semites and who want to blame Jews for everything, and they've come up with a harebrained theory. The reality is that the vast majority of people who consider themselves to be Jewish by heritage share a common strands of maternal DNA. It's one of the ways that we were able to prove that Mormonism was a crock, is that the claim of Joseph Smith was that Jews got on a mighty ship back there in the days of Solomon and sailed to America, which was completely unpopulated at the time, and that they became the American Indians, and they are therefore the witnesses to the truth for a God that he doesn't even know his name. Anyway, when they did DNA studies, what they were able to show is that there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever, in fact, absolute confirmation that the American Indians, the Native American peoples, South, Central, and North America, have no DNA that is similar to that found in Jews, and yet they share overwhelming DNA markers with people who came from Mongolia and Siberia and Russia. And so,
another question: Cherokee Nation.
Yeah.
Jewish blood.
Yeah, that's not. It's just not true. It's just not true. No, no. And most of the people that are promoting this kind of myth have either a conspiracy angle or a propaganda angle, and it's just not true. One of the things too that would be also interesting is that there is no such thing now as being able to identify oneself with any one of the 12 tribes of Israel. The genealogical records that made that possible were kept in the temple, and then the Romans in 70 AD, when they destroyed the temple, they destroyed the genealogical records. So no Jew can say, you know, I'm a Lowy, I'm from Benjamin, I'm from Yehuda. They can't do that anymore, and there's been a lot of intermarrying. It's Yahweh himself will figure it out. He created DNA. He will provide the analysis, and he will determine who is going to resettle Israel when he returns. But I'd just be very careful in any propaganda that's promoting myths of pseudo-Jews. You get yourself in trouble with that. We're at the end of the first hour of our program. We're going to return and address the questions that were raised by Jake calling in from Virginia during the second hour of our program yesterday. I think you'll enjoy what we discovered.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in the